The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Proudly sponsored by Volkswagen. Volkswagen.ie.
Or ray at rte.ie. Now, Kate Dawson is a PhD student in the School of Psychology in NUIG in Galway. She's just published a study that tracks young people's engagement with pornography, and Kate is in our Galway studio. Good afternoon, Kate.
Hello, how are you?
Good to talk to you. So, this is the biggest study of porn use in Ireland ever done.
Yes, it is. Yeah. So we had over 2,000 participants complete the quantitative study. So complete the survey.
Yeah.
So that looked at kind of trends of porn use in Ireland. So like when people first see it, how much they watch and why they watch it. And then we have some qualitative focus group data as well.
Okay. Well let's do the quantitative research first.
Cool.
Because I've been quoting a thing for the last few years because a couple of ladies from England told me that they had done research in England and that the average age when young boys encounter pornography is around 10 and a half, 11.
Yeah.
What does your research suggest?
So I suppose our sample overall was from people who were 18 to about 65. So if you looked at the stats for first exposure, you know, at that total age group, it was about 14, 15. But then when we looked specifically at the 18 to 24-year-old Irish people, the average age was between 10 and 13. So that would be about right. The average kind of internationally for boys is 11. But it is higher for girls, so between 14 and 17.
Yeah, and what your research suggests then is that because of the availability of porn now on smartphones, that people are encountering it a lot younger.
Yeah, absolutely. We actually collected some data on this a few years ago in NUIG as well, and it looks like there's been a 3% increase in early exposure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just give us a bit of your background before we go any further.
Cool. Yeah. So I work as a sex educator for the Wiser Sex Education Programme in Galway. So our remit is Connacht, so we kind of go to schools all over Connacht. And my PhD research is on pornography. You know, looking at the experiences of young Irish people and what do they think about porn, but also to use this information so we can develop evidence-based pornography educational interventions as well.
Okay. So as part of Wiser, you're going into primary schools.
Yes.
You're invited in by the schools, is that it?
Yes, that's it, yeah.
And is it sex for sex education?
For sex education. Now, most of the work I do is in secondary schools. So it's like transition year students. And we're starting to work more with second year students now. But we do go into some schools and do sex education in primary school as well.
Okay. And you invite the students to ask you questions?
Yeah. So, yeah, we do like 5 or 6 sessions. So, you know, we come in, do an hour and a half of work, and then we come back the following week and the students would write anonymous questions and we answer all of those questions then the next week. But we actually send these questions to the parents of these students as well. So they know exactly what questions are being asked and they know exactly how we're going to answer those questions as well. Yeah.
And those questions piqued your interest and suggested that there was a trend. Is that it?
Yeah, yeah. Like we were getting, so we've noticed, you know, that there's been kind of a shift in the types of anonymous questions that we were getting. So a lot of them were, you know, around how do you form relationships and how do you know if someone likes you? And then all of a sudden we started getting questions about, well, what is porn and people being like worried about their penis size and things like this. So that's originally how I kind of became interested in that area. So that's why I suppose I wanted to do my master's research to see, was there a relationship between, you know, the porn that people watch and how they felt about their bodies?
Hmm. Okay. And is there?
It really, do you know what we found? It kind of depends on the context. So if you're watching porn to learn about sex, then you might be more likely to actually compare yourself to the people that you see. But if you're only watching porn to masturbate, which is the primary reason that people actually do use it, for some people there seems to be a positive outcome in that they actually feel kind of more comfortable with their own bodies. Because we're, you know, we meet a lot of young people, especially young girls, so girls maybe around 11 or 12 or 13, and they're really disgusted by their bodies, they're really disgusted by their genitals. And this is really, really sad, you know, and this, I think,
How does that happen? How do we let that happen as a society?
We don't, I suppose we don't have the opportunity to see other people's genitals, you know, ever. And I think people then start seeing porn and then there's a certain very specific type of body type that's in porn. Men are hired because they have larger than average penises. Women would sometimes have labia reductions, so to make the, you know, the vulva seem kind of more symmetrical. And I think there's a lot of shame, especially around women's genitals, and that girls don't talk about it. Whereas for guys, I think they kind of have more of a laugh and they think that penises are kind of funny. But girls just don't talk about it at all, you know?
Right. And you think that has to change?
I really, really do. Yeah, it's not good enough, you know, that people are having disappointing first-time experiences, you know, sexual experiences and feeling bad about themselves. And I think sometimes people feel like they have to rely on porn as sort of a guide to sex because they don't have the confidence or the information to make decisions about their sex lives that they actually have thought about and kind of coincide with their own values.
Ideally, of course, they'd be getting good sex education at home and in schools.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't feel the need to go to porn for sex education. It's a bit sad if they have to go to porn, isn't it, for sex education?
Like, I do understand it in one sense, because there is some stuff that you would only get to see in porn. You know, like, the things that porn can provide, like very detailed imagery of, you know, where things go and different positions and stuff. That's the kind of thing that's probably not going to be, in sex education, or maybe people will want more information that sex education can provide. But what's really important is that, you know, we need people to understand that there are huge differences between the type of sex that they might see in porn and what to expect from their first time sexual experiences.
And that's what academics call porn literacy.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
just explain porn literacy to me.
Okay, well, what porn literacy definitely is not, and I think that some people worry about this, is that we're going in and we're going to be showing people porn. That's absolutely not what it is. It's about promoting critical engagement with porn. So giving young people enough information about real world sex and about porn so that they can make decisions about their sex lives and based on what they want to do themselves. So it's not about kind of pushing information on somebody. It's about giving them enough skills and information so that they can make very clear distinctions for themselves.
Yeah. A phrase that comes up over and over again when about sex education and maybe porn literacy should apply to as well is age appropriate.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, if you're talking to, and there are parents listening and there are grandparents listening, and if you're talking to a 10-year-old who may have seen porn, how do you broach the subject, do you think?
So I think what is helpful, especially from, you know, having experience talking to young people as well, they get very uncomfortable if you ask them direct questions. So we would never do that. We would talk about sex and porn and masturbation in very general terms. So I think that's kind of helpful for parents to know. So if they say, you know, it's totally normal to be curious, and I'm aware that some people your age might see porn, but it's really important for you to understand that sex and porn is very different to sex in real life. But I think what not to do is to become, you know, very accusatory and say, like, why are you watching it? Porn is bad. Where did you find it? Those kind of things. Because that's going to make a young person feel very defensive and go, oh God, I don't want to have this conversation.
So I suppose, you know, the hypothesis then, or from your point of view, is that it exists and we have to arm our children with the tools to manage it.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. So that's kind of what we're aiming to do with the Active Consent Program. So we've received funding from the Life's Too Good Foundation to develop an online porn literacy workshop, basically. So we're going to first roll it out with 15 to 16-year-olds and see how they get on. And then we will, you know, we can change that over time to be more appropriate for younger people if that's something that we think is necessary.
Yeah, Wiser is only available in the west of the country to a certain number of schools. It appears to me over and over again when we talk about these things that it depends on where you are in the country and who runs the school and who is the principal. That all sort of dictates what sort of sex education you're going to get in your school. That shouldn't be the case.
It shouldn't be the case, and unfortunately it is in some cases, but I do think that that is changing. And now the very fact that, you know, our guidelines around sex education are going to be updated, this will support, you know, principals and teachers in actually saying, okay, no, this is what, you know, the country is saying is important for young people. And I think the value in having, you know, online interventions as well as in-class interventions means that everybody can access information, even if they're in a school that won't actually allow, you know, comprehensive sex education to happen.
So the NCCA review of sex education is ongoing. So yes. The last time it was 1990, was it? It's over 20 years old, is it? The sex
education. Yeah, I think it was 99, is it?
99, yeah. Sorry. Yeah, yeah. So it's about 20 years old, the sex education that's in schools at the moment, and they're changing it. would your team there in NUIG, would they be approached and asked for input on it?
Yeah, so we're actually, so Dr. Padraig McNeela, who is kind of the head of the Active Consent Programme. He's working really closely with the Department of Education on how to develop sexual consent programmes. And we do hope as well that all of this information that we've gathered based on student experiences around what they think about porn, that this will be used as well. But I think at the moment, you know, there seems to be, from what I've seen from the report, is that people think that you need to talk about porn in terms of risk, and I don't think that's good enough. I think if we just say that it's really bad, and if we just kind of try to push people away from it, it's going to shut off any conversations about the really important topics that we need to have around porn, so like around consent and body image, you know what I mean?
It's difficult though, and it's probably a generational thing as well, isn't it?
Because, I think so, yeah.
But like, I'm 54, and the only porn available to me was, a magazine, which when I was in the FCA was available in the guard room, and they weren't even available in newsagents then.
Yeah.
Like, cut to now, and the proliferation of porn, so that older people just think that it probably is something that should be banned, and they prefer for what didn't exist.
Yeah, I know. Like, I totally understand where a lot of parents might be coming from, but I don't think we can bury our heads in the sand anymore. Like, we now have the data to show that lots of people are watching this at a really young age, and I totally understand that it's a tricky topic and that it's embarrassing. But it will take courage to start having these conversations. But I think, people often get a bit intimidated when they think of having, this big talk about, the talk and having this conversation, yes, about sex. But it can be a lot more subtle than that. You can use these real life opportunities, like, I heard something on the Ray Darcy show this morning this afternoon and they're talking about porn. You know, you can use these kind of opportunities to have short and simple conversations rather than having this big chat that takes ages to plan.
And what about the responsibility, parents versus schools?
I think, if there is, I think a three-pronged approach is going to be most effective. So if teachers who are, working in schools all of the time, if they can deliver parts of the sex education program, but then maybe get external organizations to come in to do other topics, and then to support parents in having these conversations, then it can mean that we can actually make real changes in this country. And, give people enough information so that they actually can be really healthy and happy young people.
And do you think it should be a teacher or an external person who delivers sex education and porn literacy?
I think it works best to have an external organisation come in. Just from speaking to students, they find it, difficult if they have a teacher who has to teach them geography at one point in the day, and then all of a sudden they're talking about something like masturbation. That's very difficult. And it's really difficult for teachers because a lot of them mightn't have that much time. They mightn't have had a lot of training. So it turns into then a very uncomfortable conversation where the teacher's uncomfortable and then the students are uncomfortable. Whereas external organisations, people feel like they can say whatever they want to them, they can ask whatever questions, and they know that it's not going to get back, and that they're kind of more comfortable, I suppose, in opening up and talking about these like difficult topics.
Yeah. I've spoken to Richie Sadlier before, and one of your colleagues there, is it Alice Burns?
Elaine Burns.
And they go into a school and they are external people.
Yes.
And Richie has said, and Alice has said as well, that they get a better reaction from the pupils because all of those things that you've just outlined. Let's see what people are saying. A question for your contributor. When you're engaging with primary school children, how far do you deviate from the RSE, the Department of Education, I suppose it is, RSE program?
So we would follow the recommended RSE guidelines, but then we wouldn't shy away from answering a question. So say, it might be in the guidelines that say we would talk about porn, and we wouldn't plan on talking about porn, but if somebody asks us about it in an anonymous question, saying like, what is it? We don't shy away from answering that question. But the parents are already well informed of this in advance, so they know exactly what potentially might come up.
And what about the whole moral thing around the porn industry and how women are treated and portrayed? Is that something you cover?
We would talk about that definitely with older students.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, there is a very dark underground part of this industry. Most of the porn industry is well regulated, and some porn companies are actually very highly ethical. But the problem is that you don't really know where your content is coming from if you're using a streaming site like Pornhub or RedTube. These are kind of like the Googles for porn. Your content could come from anywhere. And a lot of the ethically produced content, that you can make sure that everybody is treated really well, nobody's being exploited, that they're behind a paywall. So it might be like €100 for a yearly subscription. And then you're never going to have a young person who's going to ask their parents for Well, you might, but it's unusual, you think, that a young person might ask their parent for a yearly subscription to an ethically produced porn site.
Yeah.
So they're going to access the free and accessible stuff. Yeah. And you just don't know really where that's coming from.
Shocking age for children watching porn. What's going to happen in the future? We used to be told we'd go blind if we were caught with a skin book. Well, I think I was told I'd go blind if I masturbated. But yeah, it's a variation of the same thing. Yeah. But that is a big question, though, because we had John Ronson on recently, and I don't know where he got this statistic from, and I didn't call him up on it, which I should have. He said that a lot of young men have erectile dysfunction now because of the proliferation of porn. But we don't know, do we, what's going to happen? What effect this is going to have on a whole generation?
You know, from the research so far, it seems that porn doesn't have any kind of negative or positive effect on most people, but there are some people who do have negative experiences. So, like, you know, there's this whole debate around, like, porn addiction and people are going to become addicted to it. That the research shows that there actually isn't enough evidence to support this idea of porn addiction. So I think, you know, we have the opportunity now to talk about porn and to talk about it in sex education so that people don't have very serious problems later on in life, and that they are comfortable enough to talk about it. So if they do have a problem, they can seek help.
And do you think, Kate, that porn literacy will be welcomed with open arms into schools around the country?
I completely understand that some people will struggle with it, but I actually conducted some research with parents to find out what were the barriers and facilitators of talking about porn and masturbation with their kids. And most parents were actually really happy that this was on the cards, that people actually would be talking to them about pornography. Because I think some parents are really worried, you know, and they're concerned that this is going to be really bad for their child's mental health, and especially because a lot of parents might only get their information about porn from newspapers, and that's often really sensationalist, you know, like porn causes like sexual violence and these kind of things. So if parents aren't given enough information about the realities of porn and stuff, of course they might be frightened.
But I was reading your research there, and I'll let you go after this, but so the majority of men and women say that porn is not realistic in your research.
Yeah.
That's fair enough. But, and this is the but, 36% of men, that's over a third, say that it influences how they interact with a partner about sex.
Yeah.
And then another 37% says it influences the roles of men and women during sex.
Yeah, I think...
So that can't be good, can it?
No, and I think, you know, I suppose these findings are from 18 to, lot of 18 to 24-year-olds. It's going to be different again for younger people who have actually no sexual experience and no information about sex. I think, you know, when it comes to being influenced as a young adult by porn, I think it's because there's this idea that if, you know, the people in porn are doing it right, these are people who know how to have sex and they know how to have good sex. So people kind of use that as a guide on how to behave. So that, I suppose that in one sense is kind of the problem that we can challenge, I suppose, in porn literacy as well.
Mm. This pushing sex education onto teachers is ridiculous. Irish parents are just lazy when it comes to the personal development of their own kids. Irish adults need to grow up and talk about these issues with their children. You just would not hear of such lazy parenting in Germany or the Netherlands. Well, there is sex education in Dutch schools, isn't there?
There is. And, you have to kind of, understand where Irish parents are coming from as well. You know, they've grown up in a country where you weren't allowed to talk about sex, and that it was a dirty thing, and you weren't allowed to have sex outside of marriage. So we have to be respectful of the fact as well that this is going to be a big change for a lot of people, but that we can actually support them in having these conversations as well, and then we will start to see societal changes.
A big concern for us is children being exposed to porn, and pornography now is generally hardcore. How do we protect children? That's Anne-Marie, who's a psychotherapist.
Yeah, I know. So I suppose, you know, you can use parental blocks and those kind of things, but a lot of the time, you know, people might be, or children might be shown porn by their friends, or they might Google something very, you know, timid, like, you know, breasts or something like that. And then they might be led to something more extreme. Did that answer your question?
I suppose people are just, you know, surely effort should be made to ensure that childhood is not ruined by adult issues. What you're saying is it exists and we have to live with it, and we have to, you know, make sure that our children can handle it. That's what you're saying, that we can't...
Yeah, we can't shy away from it.
Yeah, we can't put our head in the sand anymore. It's there. It's a reality of life, whether you like it or not.
Yeah, but we now have the...
For a lot of people, that's very uncomfortable.
Yes, I understand that. Yeah, I completely understand that. But
and the thoughts of a 10 or 11 year old looking at porn is just, for some people, it's just, they can't get their heads around it. I can understand that. Porn is filth, end of. Bundy, serial killer, cited porn as being an instigator of his heinous life. Porn is just plain evil, says that person.
Okay, so I suppose that is one of the arguments that you would hear a lot, you know, that porn leads to sexual violence. But actually, for the studies that have kind of shed some light on this relationship, is that it looks like people who are highly sexually aggressive, they might also watch a lot of porn, but both of those things are influenced by a third factor. So somebody who has high sex drive or who is highly impulsive, they might be more inclined to act aggressively, but they might also be more inclined to watch a lot of porn. But it's not necessarily that porn is actually causing the behaviour.
Mm. I suppose, maybe this is overly simplifying the thing, but the world would be a better place maybe without porn. I don't know, but it's there and we have to deal with it.
I think, you know, for adults, and it can be a very valuable thing. A lot of adults get a lot of enjoyment out of it, and kind of enjoyment out of watching it with their partner, but it wasn't designed to be an educator for children, and that's why we need to design these interventions.
Yeah, they're looking at things that aren't meant for them.
Exactly, yeah.
And we need to deal with that. Okay. Kate Dawson, thank you so much. Porn Report is the report surveying students on pornography use and involving them in planning critical learning interventions. And what we didn't get around to talking about is the input that the students have into what you're planning for porn literacy. So
yes,
you ask them what should happen so that they can be better equipped to deal with porn. And they gave you the input, which is great. Maybe we'll talk another time about that.
Perfect, that'd be great.
Thanks, Kate. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.